Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on Cyclesman.com. He's speaking to us from Gulf Shores, Alabama. Welcome back to the show, Tim.
Jim, as always, thanks for having me.
Tim, you found an interesting statistic or a database that for a lot of people, they probably weren't aware that there was such a thing. It's called an M2, and it basically tells us what the money supply is that you can lay your hands on immediately, stuff in your checking account, savings account, a short-term CD, and that supply of money has changed. Can you tell us about it?
Well, it's the growth rate, and I was aware, I track a lot of data. And, you know, it's kind of like Gordon Gekko said, information, or how do you say it, information, or he said the most valuable commodity is information. And that's true. Is I have a pretty good database, track a lot of stuff, a lot of it you can get from the Fed, and I watch that data. But one of the things is I knew back in November that the growth rate of M2, as you described, had moved below its zero line. But there wasn't enough history. It only goes back into, I think, 56 or 59 or something like that. I think 1959 on the Fed site. And so there wasn't enough history to know the significance of that. Okay, it went below zero. Well, that's not good, but okay, well, how do you wrap some sort of meaning around it? And so I was able to find some long-term data. You know, I just did a search and found the data and downloaded the data, and then was able to get it and plot it. And what I found is that there have been five other occurrences when that happened. And it's not a good thing. The first one, from being a market student, of history, I immediately recognized it from one of my old books from the Panic or Crisis. They called them Panics and Crises, and I don't know which one they labeled it, but 1873, 1876, when I saw that date and it had gone below zero, I immediately recognized that as one of those great panic times. And, you know, back in the day, they called them either a panic or a crisis when the market would collapse like that, or, you know, decline hard, you know, major declines. They referred to them in that way. And then, anyway, the second one that I saw immediately was the crisis of 1893. And then I look, and then there's the third one. I knew there was a little event after 1921, or after World War One, I should say, in 1921. And there it was, and then lo and behold, it happened again in 1930. Well, we all know that, you know, about 1930, and then it happened one other time in a minimal way in 1958. 1958 was kind of the exception. But all of those other events were significant downturns in the market. And looking at market history, they were all, this is fascinating, actually. They were all, how do I say this? They all followed periods of speculation, of a bubble in some form. Maybe it was a railroad bubble or whatever the case may have been, but it was some sort of a bubble in speculation. Land prices, one of them was with land prices and farming and that sort of thing further back. And they all ended with massive deflation and banking issues. And what I thought was fascinating about that is that here we are, this growth rate has just crossed below zero back in November. It closed the year below zero, and thus far it's still below zero. And then these banking issues surface. And when you read the history book, all these other times, except for 1958, there was, you know, it was associated with massive speculation and banking crises. So the common denominators are there, looking at the history. We've talked about for years how, you know, we're in this bubble that they just, you know, continued to manipulate and push into a bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger bubble. And that's, you know, what they've been fighting is these deflationary forces all along, all these years. And now you connect the dots with this history showing that all these other times this has happened has been, you know, bubbles, massive speculation, infusions of liquidity, and you just dig into that history. It's the same thing. And then it surfaces with banking problems. That's why they're trying to reliquify, and you know, it's trying to say, okay, we got the Fed backstopped these, or the government backstopped these, you know, these issues with the banks we saw last week or week before last, whenever it was, and it's trying to ease those fears because it's all the same thing. It's a replay. It's the exact same thing.
Wow. So there was this warning indicator that banks could be in trouble. You're the first person I've ever heard mention this.
Well, I saw one other chart on it, and I think I'm the first person to tie it to the history, but I did see one other chart on this. Tying it to the history, I think, and then in the latest research letter, I also tied it to some other things besides just the history, tying it to actual price action in commodities and making sense of some long-term cycles. And my conclusion in looking at this data, like I said, I lay it out in the research letters. It's actually quite fascinating, I think, because it when you look at it, I mean, we've been talking about this bubble. And let me digress for a minute. Maybe rambling, but let me digress for a minute. The reality is that since 2000, you know, that's what the Fed has been fighting all along. Because if you just think about it with common sense, you don't have to be a market analyst. You just have to have a little bit of a brain and just think. The natural, and you know, looking at data, economic data, you know, you can look at simple things like the job participation rate. The velocity of money. There's a number of different measures. You can look at some of the industrial production data. There's a number of measures you can look at. The natural economy, in my opinion, looking at that data, tried to peak in 2000. And looking at one of the longer term cycles that I tied this data to, it tried to peak in and around 2000. And I'm talking much longer term cycle. There's some cycles that I show in this letter going back to 1800, and there's only been six of these cycles, and we're trying to come on the, you know, on the downside. One of these, the sixth cycle is now trying to turn down. Well, in 2000, the fifth cycle was trying to turn down, and it's these long term economic cycles I'm looking at, and I can show it clearly. I mean, it's clear as day, and. Anyway, coming out of that natural top and that fifth long-term economic cycle is when the Fed started doing what they're doing. Hmm. And if you just think about it, that's when they started with, you know, they pushed the market up coming out of the 2002 low into the 2007 top and created what we've all forgotten about it, but, you know, Google it. It's there. They called it the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. And that was a direct result of extending the bubble. They extended it. What were they fighting? Why did they do that? Because they were fighting the natural forces, deflationary forces of the market. They were trying to hold it up, deflation. And then coming out of that 09 low, what do? More of the same. Why? Because they're trying to stem the fight the forces, the natural forces of deflation. This thing wants to fall. They're trying to hold it up. So they keep doing more and more of the same. And then, you know, I thought it was gone at the 2020 top, but then what happened? And I've shown in some of the research letters how that was used to hold it up again. So, you know, we've had this inflationary cycle that has helped hold things together. And this hike in interest rates has actually helped. It's a long, complicated story. I've covered it over the last year in the research letters, and that information is still available to subscribers. It shows how it's been used to hold this up. So this entire sixth economic cycle that I have found, it has been all in an effort to hold this thing together that wants to turn. They're trying to keep the, like a clown trying to keep the, I'm not saying they're a clown by no means, they're geniuses at what they do, so I didn't mean it that way, but it's like trying to hold, balance the balls, keep the balls in the air. And now, here we are in this sixth cycle that's trying to turn down and deflate, that whole cycle in and of itself, again, has been on the back of these efforts to hold it. And then we have this M2 growth rate turned down in that environment. And so this is really, really fascinating to see. And it's also, I think, much, much worse than I imagined. But, here we are, and nobody even realizes the bubble that it is.
Does it mean they don't have to hike interest rates? This is happening naturally. The brakes are being put on.
I think that the downturn in interest rates is going to be perceived. And this entire rate hiking cycle, let's talk about that for a minute. Yeah. This entire rate hiking cycle has not been natural. It has not been, and this is controversial, but I can prove it, but it has not been a result of monetary inflation. We've talked about that. It has been a result of supply chain in inflation. And so these rate hiking cycles, this rate hiking cycle, you can, raise rates till the cows come home, as they say, but that doesn't affect the supply chain issues. It's not as we're being told. If it was monetary inflation, you're trying to cool the economy, then sure, interest rates is the tool to use. But for supply chain, no. And so this rise in interest rates, what I'm saying is, I think this has been part of another tool to hold it, believe it or not, to keep things going, because it's hard to explain to you, see the research, but it's been another tool. Well, now I think the market is actually, there's a long-term cycle in interest rates that I think is peaking here. It's finally taking hold. A long-term cycle in bonds and interest rates move in an opposite direction. So it's a long-term cycle in long bond bottoming, interest rates peaking, and I think that is forcing a natural turn in this interest rate hiking cycle. And so when that cycle bites and these interest rates start to turn down, that's going to be perceived as a positive thing, and it may be in the very short term, but in the grand picture it is not. And that is why, circling back around to this, that is why this interest rate hiking cycle has been used as a tool. And now that the market's trying to turn rates down, I think it's not going to be the positive thing that it is. So it's like watching a soap opera, bit by bit by bit, and it just keeps going and going and extending, and this play happens and that play happens. But the setup is all within the context of this mammoth bubble that has formed, and now with this M2 thing turning below the zero line, it's quite the setup.
In other words, they really should be making it easier to get money to help solve this supply chain problem, and that will bring inflation down. But instead, you've made it much more costly to cure this problem, where you need more production and an easing of shipment of goods.
Exactly. And now, as contrary as to thinking as that sounds, but it is that inflation. Now, think about what you just said. The natural force is deflation. By creating the inflation, that has helped to hold this thing at bay. And so that's exactly right, Jim, exactly right. And so now with interest rates trying to turn, and the downturn that's trying to take place with commodities, that deflationary force is trying to reassert itself again. But yes, that's exactly right. The upswing in commodities kept it together. It was a tool to hold things together again. And now here we are at another inflection point.
So what should the Fed be doing? Should they just get out again? Is this a case of they feel they have to do something or appear to do something when really the solution was just get the hell out of the way and let the market settle down and solve this itself?
I think they probably did what they thought they had to do to try to, I remember the term bridge the gap. Remember that term back then? They tried to bridge the gap between the cycles, between the downturns. And in the process, they didn't bridge the gap. It created this, you know, this like I said, this last entire sixth economic up cycle, this upswing from 2020, or excuse me, from 2000, has been, in effect, a fabricated cycle. I don't know how else to say it. It's been a result of their intervention, if you will, to bridge the gap. But it hasn't bridged the gap because the economy has only gotten worse. Inflation has gone, you know, through the roof, and we're in the environment we're in. The economic environment now is, in my opinion, much worse than it was in in 2000 as far as jobs and the real underlying economy. So, in effect, it has made things worse. Whereas, if they had let it breathe, then you would have, you know, taken the pain. You know, it's kind of like being sick and you don't want to throw up, but once you throw up, you feel better. And so if they would have let this market exhale, let that cycle exhale, and now, in hindsight, looking at it, I thought that then, but I'm just saying that we would probably be at a point 20 years down the road where that cycle would have already bottomed. We would be on a foundational footing where, you know, we'd be at the exact opposite of where we are now. We'd be on the upswing and not continue to teeter on the edge of this downturn. And so it's a matter of how well can they keep the Band-Aid, duct tape, and bubble gum in the cracks here to keep this thing from coming apart.
We'll be back right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Tim Cyclesman. Tim, would gold protect people if things were about to fall apart?
I don't think so. I mean, ultimately, I think all asset classes go down together. We've seen a fear trade with gold. You know, I had some intermediate term degree cycle lows. Actually, it was two different cycles, both intermediate degree, one slightly longer term, bottomed in November. So the upswing there was underway. And we have seen, in association with that upswing, a fear trade here with this bank stuff going on. But ultimately, I think that when the deflation comes, just like we saw in 2000 and 07, 08, 09, I think gold and the entire commodity complex goes with it. In other words, all asset classes, I think, will be at risk.
Tim, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Jim, you're welcome. And if anyone's interested in this research, it's quite fascinating. I lay it out in graphical form in a chart where you can see these six economic cycles. I tie the data to it. It's clear to see. It's available at cyclesman.com. Through a subscription and a research letter. So it's quite fascinating. I encourage people to take a look at that.
My guest has been Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on cyclesman.com. If you have any questions for Tim or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.